Welcome to Disinformation Wars, a project of the American Foreign Policy Council. I'm AFPC Senior Vice President Ilan Berman. Disinformation Wars is a series of conversations with officials, experts, and practitioners designed to take you behind the scenes of the struggle for hearts and minds of global publics that's now taking place around the world. It's a contest being waged by Russia, China, Iran, and other actors, and the stakes could not be any higher.
It is one of the most popular media channels in the Middle East. It has become a powerful force for shaping Arab public opinion, and it has served as a soapbox for some of the most extreme ideological elements in the Muslim world. I'm speaking, of course, about Al Jazeera. Since it was launched in 1996 as a pet project of Qatar's emir, Sheikh Hamad bin Khalifa Al Thani, the channel has grown into a media colossus. Today, Al Jazeera reaches more than 300 million households worldwide, boasts bureaus in more than 50 countries, and broadcasts in both Arabic and English. Yet Al Jazeera isn't an independent media outlet. It is controlled by the government of Qatar, which bankrolls its budget and oversees its operations. It's reporting on a slew of issues, from regional ones like Iran and Saudi Arabia to broader subjects like social unrest in the United States, has engendered tremendous controversy, and it has given airtime to a long list of deeply controversial characters, from the late Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden to members of Egypt's banned Muslim Brotherhood movement to the militants of Hamas. It is, in short, a key element of Qatari soft power, one that gives the tiny Persian Gulf nation an outsized impact on regional politics in the Middle East and on global perceptions. To get some insights into Al Jazeera's reach and influence, I spoke with Ambassador Mark Wallace. A businessman and lawyer, Mark is, among many other things, the CEO of the Counter-Extremism Project, a bipartisan, not-for-profit international policy organization that is dedicated to countering the threat from extremist ideologies. Previously, Mark served in a variety of roles in the Bush administration, including as the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, representative for UN management and reform. Mark, it's a real pleasure. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me on, Alon.
All right. I want to start with the origins and evolution of Al Jazeera. Can you talk a little bit about the channel's early days, what it was designed to do for Qatar and for the Middle East more broadly?
There's long been a vacuum of information and news in the Middle East. And to the Al Thani royal family credit, they saw an opportunity to have an outsized role in both policy and opinion leadership in the region. Now, the problem with that clever insight by the Al Thani family is that they bet on the Islamist side of the transformation that we're seeing happen throughout the Arab world and Islam right now. And regrettably, I think that that's the backward approach. They saw Al Jazeera as an opportunity to fill both political influence as well as cater to a desire for information in a manner that was digestible across the Arab world.
So you mentioned it in passing, but I want to drill down on the Middle East as it looks today, because you're absolutely right. The Middle East is very different now. The dynamics that the Al Thani family were trying to capitalize upon when they launched Al Jazeera in the late 1990s are substantially reversed, you could say. Is the channel still an influential force in the region? And how much does it move the needle, quote unquote, on Arab discourse writ large?
Well, I think it's a malign influence. We're men of a certain age now, Alon, because we can look back 20 or 30 years. And if we go back in time 20 to 30 years, we would say that the developments across the region right now are something that we all hoped, prayed for, where you see moderation and progress breaking out across large swaths of the region. You see the Abrahamic Accords, where Arabs and Israelis are uniting forces. You see the continued amazing development of the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain. You see it now in Saudi Arabia with an incredible transformation there. And you're seeing a transformation occur. Now, when the Qataris formed Al Jazeera, they took a bet on the Muslim Brotherhood and political Islam that was in their self-interest. They were trying to ensure their long-term viability. Remember, there aren't that many of them. There are 300,000 of them. And they were trying to project power and ensure their own stability. And they made a deal effectively with the likes of Yusuf Qaradawi so that they could inoculate themselves if political Islam spread across the region. Now, that bet turned out to be bad. because you're seeing incredible swaths of the region heading towards moderation, progress, and a new dawn in the Middle East, which is so hopeful. It's one of the true bright spots of the world. Yet the Qataris are still bankrolling and pursuing that agenda with Al Jazeera. Everyone thinks that Al Jazeera's influence across the region is outsized. I think that Al Jazeera's influence across the region is outsized. But what I found remarkable in the data that I've seen is it's not viewed as a trusted source, because most people with mobile phones, when it's in the case of Al Jazeera Plus, are relatively sophisticated. There's high mobile phone penetration across the Middle East and North Africa. And I think that they're suspicious of it, and they're looking for the progress that is being offered by at least a portion of the region. But now you have two poles. You have the Qataris, you have Turkey, and others that are trying to bring the region back to an era of political Islam. And then you have an entire arc of moderation and progress that couples the Israelis, the Emiratis, the Saudis, the Bahrainis, and others. So I think their influence is malign. I don't think that they are a trusted source, but there's nothing else quite like it. And they're trying to pull the region back from the progress that we're seeing really over the last 5-10 years, that if we had thought was happening 30 years ago, we would all said it was amazing.
And this gets to the heart of the problem that you mentioned, that many others have highlighted as well, which is that Al Jazeera has a definite ideological bent, and it's a bent that mirrors the political priorities of the Qatari government. Talk a little bit about what those are exactly. What are the most pressing issues today as far as Doha is concerned?
You have an incredible contrast in Doha. You have a large American airbase, but at the same time, they've been the most vocal supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood, have housed the leaders of Hamas, and have been the vacation spot for the Taliban in exile, and now as they return to Afghanistan. That's an incredible dichotomy. And it's right now, it's seemingly proving useful to American policymakers because of the unfortunate circumstances of Afghanistan. But that's transactional. We are seeing a generation, if not century, moment of transformation across the Arab world. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us who have worked in this space for a long time to try to encourage that transformation. And I think the likes of the Althanis and Erdogan and others who are trying to maintain that focus on political Islam, on the Muslim Brotherhood and others, is the past, and hopefully is going to continue to decline. And look, the Qataris have their own priorities. Remember, they're a small country, few people, they have a lot of money, and they've deployed that money quite capably to pursue their own policies. They made a bet on political Islam. They have to be more lenient and acceptable to the Iranian regime because they share gas fields. And they've been concerned about the political Islamists because they have had them in their midst and they made a bet with them. And I think they don't know how to get rid of them as easily, whether it be Hamas or the Muslim Brotherhood and the likes of Qaradawi and his minions. So their priorities have been, I guess the generous version is to play a double game, to satisfy the Americans with the airbase, but to cater to political Islam so that they are hedging their bets. And at the same time, making nice with the Iranians because they depend upon their adjacent gas fields.
These topics are, of course, highly controversial, and Al Jazeera has come under immense criticism from the Arab governments in the Middle East as a result. And a number of nations have banned Al Jazeera outright from broadcasting to their citizens. The Saudis have, the Jordanians have, the Egyptians have, the Bahrainis have. Can you talk a little bit about why? What's the calculus in those capitals, and why are they so concerned about what Al Jazeera is doing?
Al Jazeera has been the mouthpiece for the Muslim Brotherhood. The most popular show was Qaradawi show for many, many years. And they catered to a form of political Islam to approach the Arab street, if you will. And I think that that was highly offensive to the arc of allies in the region, whether it be Sisi in Egypt, who is contending with Muslim Brotherhood, the Saudis, the Emiratis, and others who are trying to advance past this political Islam and take steps to what we're seeing now are hopefully moderation progress and alliances even with Israel. And I think that those governments took action to ban what was obvious. During the fights with the Soviet Union, the propaganda wars were obvious. This is nothing that we haven't seen before. It's just that Al Jazeera has been more effective because they're spending a lot of money doing it. It's been the largest voice in the region, but it is a propaganda machine. It's owned, funded by the Qatari government, and its board of directors is selected by the royal family. It is truly a propaganda machine of the Qataris, and their desire to hedge their bets with political Islam, to be moderate towards the Iranians, are inconsistent with many of the goals and strategies and the foreign policy of the United States and our allies throughout that region. It was very easy for a lot of those governments to therefore ban Al Jazeera because it was a propaganda machine and there was no reason to allow it in. And you've seen Al Jazeera in the United States has had some real difficulties. You know, it was a spokesman in many ways for the Muslim Brotherhood and even some favorable inclination to Al Qaeda.
You mentioned propaganda and influence operations, and I want to stay on that subject for a minute because over the years, the channel has been a launchpad for a series of influence operations that are geared towards foreign audiences, including here in the United States. Probably the most prominent is AJ Plus, which you mentioned, which is a digital social media platform specifically geared towards English-speaking millennial audiences. Since it was launched a few years ago, AJ Plus has become widely popular and it's got millions of followers on Facebook and on YouTube. So here's a question. How has AJ Plus influenced our social discourse and in what direction?
I think it was 2020. The Justice Department announced that they would be designated for registration as the mouthpiece of the Qatari government. That was entirely appropriate. We're living in an era of highly advanced influence operations. Influence operations in the United States are not new. We've seen them for many, many years. But with the advent of technology, social media, and the obvious fissures of transparency and openness in Western democracies, including the United States, it has allowed our enemies to try to drive us against ourselves. And I think the political discourse in our country right now is at a nadir. And I think much of that is driven by our enemies who are seeking to divide us. What we haven't seen is our friends also take advantage of some of those political fissures and transparency in order to drive their own agenda. I would like to call the Qataris our frenemies because in one instance, they house a lot of American troops in our Al Udeid Air Base, but at the same time, their policies are inconsistent with what a sound American policy is and our allies across the region. They are the one government that truly has figured it out, put their money where their mouth is, and identified the fissures of our Western democracy to run influence operations in the United States. Now, I don't like that influence operation. We have lobbyists on Capitol Hill. We have all sorts of people seeking to influence. And that's our system. We allow influence, but they need to do it the right way. And I think if they were forced to register and they were transparent about their interests, it would be much harder for the Qataris to run these influence operations. And Al Jazeera Plus has filled a vacuum. As I said, when you look at the data, one of the things that is so compelling in the region is that mobile phone usage, penetration, and watching is incredibly high. I think it's the highest or second highest in the world by region right now. And they were very smart in developing Al Jazeera Plus in order to tap into that. Now, I still think that there is suspicion across the Middle East and North Africa about the Al Jazeera platform, but there hasn't been effective counterweight. And I think we have to call out Al Jazeera Plus for what it is, which is a spokesman for a regime that is not always aligned. And in fact, in my opinion, openly hostile to the United States and our allied interests in the region.
Well, you mentioned AJ Plus being asked by the Department of Justice to register as a foreign agent under what we call FARA. It's worth noting, by the way, that they haven't yet done so, and their content does not yet include the disclaimer. And under FARA, if you're forced to register under FARA, it doesn't mean that you're banned from American airwaves. It doesn't mean that you're banned from distributing content in the United States. It just has to have a disclaimer showcasing your ties to a foreign government. And Al Jazeera hasn't been forced to do that. AJ Plus was asked by the Department of Justice. They so far have refused. But there's a larger conversation here about where Al Jazeera sits in the pantheon of influence operations. And this has been on the radar of the Washington policy community for years. And there have been multiple efforts by Congress and by the executive branch to force the channel more broadly to register, but they've all fallen flat for a host of different reasons. Why haven't we seen progress on this front so far?
I'm surprised in some respects, and I think it perhaps reveals the intentions of that influence operation. I don't know why they don't just agree to register and admit that it is the spokesman for guttery policy and it is a viewpoint, one that I don't subscribe to. But the mere fact that they are not willing to sort of fess up to that agenda suggests that they want to have it continue to be a more subversive influence operation, which if they were our ally, and if they are a worthy enough ally to house a major American airbase, they shouldn't be doing that to us. If the Al-Thanis were on this podcast, I'd say, why don't you just register? You know, I don't agree with your foreign policy, but you're entitled to advocate for the things that you want. And there's no shame in that. I don't agree. I'm on the other side of this issue from you. But the mere fact that you're fighting it and you're trying to pretend it's not an influence operation suggests a subversive type activity that you don't do with your friends, particularly when you're housing an airbase. And look, the reason why they haven't had to is that they've deployed lots of money in Washington. They've deployed it and they've deployed it well. And, you know, sadly, in Washington, when you hire extensive lobbying interests, sometimes you can make a lot of hay when you make investments in key states around the union. You know, the economic imperative of supporting the United States and other places gets you some flexibility in Washington decision-making. And that is part of our process. But we haven't thoughtfully countered that.
Well, it's certainly an issue to continue to watch. Let's leave it there. Mark, thank you for taking the time. It was a real pleasure.
It was great to be with you. And thanks for all that you do and all that you cover. It's always insightful. So thank you, Alon.
Thank you for tuning in to Disinformation Wars. To learn more about the American Foreign Policy Council and our work on public diplomacy, visit us online at www.afpc.org. And as always, we hope you'll join us again next time.